Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Call It podcast for the 10th day of June 2019. It's a Monday. But hey, you know what? Monday puts us that much closer to Friday. You can't get to Friday without going through Monday, so let's just plow through it. I'm Derek Hunter. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend, pushing play, subscribing, writing and rating and doing all those reviewy things and help spread the word. Without you, this show doesn't grow, and it is. I love getting those emails. They're like, I've turned on so many people to the program. You, my friend, are a hero. If you want to enter to win a signed copy of the Brent Bozell, Tim Graham book, Unmasked, that we talked about on Friday's show, you still have time. It's just email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. It's going to be a shortened entry period. We have three copies. I'm going to give away two on the show this week on Friday. You'll find out who wins. But I am sitting down with, at least I'm scheduled to, knock on wood. Whenever I announce these things, they tend to, it's about 50-50 that they get canceled. But I am sitting down with Shannon Bream on Wednesday. Yes, that's right. Shannon Bream from Fox News to talk about her new book, and I will get her to draw the winners. So that means that you have until, I'll just say noon? We'll say 1 o'clock. We'll say 1 o'clock on Wednesday to enter. Just email Derek at dailycaller.com. Make sure you put that you're entering for the Brent Bozell book or Unmasked in the subject line or somewhere in the body. Don't hide it. Don't write a novel and have it like paragraph 17, because I probably won't find it there. But make sure you, and I'll respond and say you're entered. Good luck, and whatever else you got to say. But by Wednesday at 1 o'clock will be the cutoff to win one of two signed copies of Brent Bozell's new book. And I appreciate all the people who are sending me the, you know, the screen captures of the receipts saying, I already bought it. If you've already bought it, you get entered twice. That's the benefit of it. That's the bonus. Of course, if your name gets drawn twice, you're not going to win twice. You'll only win once, because I want two people to win. But you'll be entered twice, so you'll double your pleasure, double your fun. It's the double mint gum of book drawings. All right, I have a lot of things I want to get to on the program today. And just as kind of a funny note, Jim Acosta's book comes out on Tuesday. And we've got audio of him talking about why he's the hero for our times. He really is. Jim Acosta's book is about how it's a dangerous time. The subtitle is It's Dangerous Time to Tell the Truth in America. And my question to Jim Acosta is, how would you know? How would you know, Jim? When was the last time you told the truth in America? I was looking at, of course, all the news over the weekend, and I come across this thing. It was up on Drudge, too. I was surprised. Drudge just seems to be getting a little lazy and just taking the word. He seems to be taking a little more liberal bent. He seems to go in and out of love with President Trump. And I see a headline that says that Trump fumes after watching MSNBC takes aim at the parent company. And I'm thinking, well, this is entirely possible. He could have gone off on a long Twitter rant about how MSNBC sucks and maybe said something about regulation and shut it down and whatever. And then I click on the story, and it's a Mediaite story. And the headline is, Trump fumes after watching MSNBC takes aim at parent company, quote, such lies. And you scroll down, and it's one tweet. It's just one tweet. All it is, and the story, this is what's meant by clickbait, where they make this big, gigantic, broad, sweeping generalization in the headline. You're like, holy crap, what did Trump do? Did he go off on like a 15-tweet rant about how he's going to make sure that MSNBC or NBC News or Comcast somehow are punished? No, it's one tweet. The story, of course, they add all the emotion, because that's what journalism is now, is making everybody hyperventilate over everything. The story reads, President Donald Trump continues not to be a fan of MSNBC programming, arguing that almost everything they are saying is the opposite of truth after watching today. And you think, okay, what's going on? And there's the tweet. This is the entirety of Donald Trump fuming. know what planet this is fuming on, but it's a shining example of what we talked about with Brent Bozell, and it's a shining example of why Jim Acosta is a laughingstock. The president tweeted, quote, "Watched MSNBC this morning just to see what the opposition was saying about events of the past week. Such lies. Almost everything they're saying is the opposite of the truth. Fake news. No wonder their ratings, along with CNN, are way down. The hatred Comcast has is amazing." Period. End quote. That's it. That's the entirety of it. Yet that is portrayed as, my God, he's fuming. You can hear and feel the vitriol, the anger dripping off the keyboard. He was out of control. That's not fuming, ladies and gentlemen. I can say that myself in my own words without showing really any emotion whatsoever, because it is a resuscitation mostly of fact. Every once in a while, MSNBC accidentally does some real truth-telling, but for the most part, their shows are about how the president is a puppet of Vladimir Putin, how he is being bought and paid for by foreign diplomats and foreign companies, by them staying at his hotels for a couple of nights. That sort of absurdity. And for a particular group of the American people, namely their audience, that works, man. That's like slurping the last sip of a shake through the straw. They want every last bit of it that they can get, but it's not really reality. How in the hell is that fuming? Honestly, how is that fuming? Where is the anger? Where is the outrage? Where is the follow-up? You don't fume for 240 characters or whatever, 280 characters, whatever the hell it is now on Twitter, and just move on. That's not fuming. That's not the definition of the word. You can say explodes, but it's not really even an explosion. This is what the media does. This is why the president has found so much traction with the fake news mantra, because they're so full of crap. The Mediaite is a liberal website. They have like 1.5 conservatives who write for them, but for the most part, they are a left-wing website. There's no fuming there. There's no outrage there. But there's also no clicks in saying simply President Trump tweeted today about MSNBC and how he thinks they're lying to the American people. That would be an accurate headline. That would not get anybody to click on it. I fell for it. I found the fuming. Oh, man, he's fuming. I want to see what he said, because you never know with the president of the United States. Let's be honest. He literally could have gone off on a 15-tweet rant where I would have been laughing or nodding in agreement or cringing, whatever. All of it is possible. None of it is in this actual story. That's how sad and sick the media has become. Speaking of sad and sick, should we do the Jim Acosta thing now? Yeah, let's do the Jim Acosta thing. He's got his book coming out. Poor, poor Jim Acosta. The worst part about being Jim Acosta is you wake up every day and that's who you are. That's as good as your day is going to get. I guess when you hammer the big checks from CNN, okay. But his book is called The Enemy of the People, A Dangerous Time to Tell the Truth in America. And you can really feel him patting himself on the back as he thought up that title. And you can only imagine. Somebody saw on Twitter, I said on Twitter, I don't know who it was. They said, I just imagine this is 200 pages of selfies. And it's not, mostly because that would be too expensive of a book to publish. Putting pictures in a book on those glossy pages and color printing, that's too expensive. But I imagine the spirit of the selfie rides throughout this book. I'm looking at the Amazon page, says that it's 368 pages. That is an exceedingly long book. It really, most books are about 270 to 300 pages, usually closer to the 270 than 300. But I imagine maybe Jim put a bunch of links in the footnotes to selfies. I could describe it. I could read the description here. But I think Jim would do better to try and describe what this thing is. I kind of thought that it would be a coloring book. But he appeared on reliable sources on CNN yesterday with the human potato, Brian Stelter. And it was a love fest to a certain extent. It was mostly Jim Acosta love, both from Brian Stelter and for himself. He really does think he's saving the world. Let's listen to a little bit of this exchange. It's amazing when two people get together. It seems mathematically impossible, but when two people to get together and their collective IQ drops, I didn't know that was possible. But every once in a while on cable news, they prove that it is possible. And here is one such instance. Let's listen to a little bit of Jimmy and the Potato.
It is one of the president's most poisonous phrases, the enemy of the people. He's used the phrase more than 30 times on Twitter, usually attacking news outlets like CNN. Most recently, just a few hours ago. It's time, yeah, but it's still damaging, casting fellow Americans as enemies. Well, it is also a phrase CNN's White House correspondent Jim Acosta is now reclaiming. He's out this Tuesday with a new book titled The Enemy of the People, A Dangerous Time to Tell the Truth in America. The book is out on Tuesday, and Jim Acosta is here now for his first live interview all about it.
What does that mean, he's taking back, he's reclaiming the phrase enemy of the people? what does that mean? Oh, no, I'm taking that back. Yeah, you're the enemy of the people. Is Jim Acosta, well, did it used to have a good meaning? And somehow Donald Trump, oh, you're the good enemy of the people. And now Donald Trump has perverted that to mean the enemy of the people. So I'm taking it back, and we're now the good enemy of the people. I don't understand what the human potato is there talking about. But this is the rambling introduction to Jim Acosta. I love how he said this hurtful phrase, a dangerous phrase. It's kind of funny saying, and by the way, they always, always, always leave out a very important caveat the president adds when speaking the phrase, quote, enemy of the people. There's a little bit that goes before that. It is the fake news is the enemy of the people. The fake news media. Fake news is the enemy of the people. Some variant of that. Fake news part that they leave out, the lies, the gross mischaracterizations, things that we cover on this show every day, that you can see why the president would consider that to be the enemy of the people. Personally, I consider that to be a massive, massive problem. Done deliberately, it is easily the enemy of the people when you are lying, misleading, picking things out of context, taking half a sentence or half an answer and saying the president said X, Y, or Z today. Can you believe that? Like the example that seems to resurface every 6 months where some blue checkmark moron out on Twitter goes, president called immigrants, migrants, sweet, nourishing migrants. He called them animals. So what do you expect? It was racist because he was talking about Mexicans. Something like that. They go off on, oh, he called them animals. You should not call human beings animals. And then you remember, because it's come up so many times, that the president was explicitly talking about murderous gang members of MS-13 and the things that they do. The beheadings, the killing of a 13-year-old girl right here in the Washington, D.C. area by three guys who thought she might go and tell the authorities on their activities. So they killed her. They chopped her up. There are beheadings happening in this country. You just don't hear about them in the mainstream media because, well, it doesn't fit the narrative. You've got Joy Reid on MSNBC saying that MS-13 is a made-up myth by Fox News. So are people cutting their own heads off to get some airtime on Fox News, Joy? No. Unlikely. I think you can safely say that is a highly unusual thing and probably not very likely. But they don't let the facts stand in the way of a good story. That, to my mind, is the enemy of the people. That is what, unambiguously, the president is talking about when he's used that phrase. But to the human potato and to Jim Acosta, it is a direct shot at them and their profession, which really should tell you something about them, really. If you're ever in a group of people friends, acquaintances, and you're at a party or having a drink or whatever, go off. Just, it's a little thought experiment. It's kind of fun. Go off on a rant about how adultery is wrong, about how cheating on your spouse is awful. And it's really just the lowest form, or cheating even on your boyfriend or your girlfriend, it's just the lowest form of humanity. You don't have to go all that long. But you'll watch the people. Somebody will chime up and say, well, you know, sometimes there's a, or they'll get all nervous and hem and haw. That person's probably cheating. When somebody calls fake news the enemy of the people who protest that classification the most are likely traffickers in fake news, are likely practitioners of fake news. I'm just throwing it out there. It seems likely to me. A little thought experiment. Maybe you can try that on your friends next time you want to lose friends and alienate people. But anyway, that was the introduction to Jim Acosta. There is, of course, more.
Jim Acosta, chief White House correspondent for CNN. Why write a book about your experience?
Well, I wanted to send a message, you know, to folks who really care about what we do. And the message is basically this. I did not want my children to grow up in a country where the press is called the enemy of the people.
He wanted to send a message to the American people that he wanted to send a message to his children that he didn't want his children to grow up in a country where the press is called the enemy of the people, which you could have just handled by walking down the hallway and talking to your kids, I would think. But this is, again, not what the president has said. And again, he works for an employer who thinks it's perfectly fine to compare the president of the United States to Hitler, where he thinks it's absolutely okay to say that Republicans' health care plan is going to kill tens of thousands of people. He thinks it's fine to say that the president of the United States is a puppet of Vladimir Putin and conspired with the Russians, has obstructed justice, is a lawless man, a tactless man who needs to be removed from office. These are all things that are said on CNN's airwaves, not just, you know, once, but countless times and nearly a daily basis, if not a daily basis. But he doesn't want his children. He's fine with his children growing up thinking that the president of the United States is a puppet of a hostile foreign nation, but not that fake news is the enemy of the people. No, no. Misinformation. How is misinformation not the enemy of the people? How is it where misinformation really comes in hand? Thank God we had that misinformation there, or else the people would have known things. The arrogance of this guy knows no bounds.
Brian, you and I have grown up in a country for the last several decades here where, you know, Republicans and Democrats wanted to be in power in Washington, but they didn't demonize us to this extent. Mm. And I think it started off as an act based on my reporting that the president threw out fake news and the enemy of the people at the beginning just to sort of taunt and troll us. And that has essentially gotten out of control. And now it's gotten to the point where his supporters, some of his supporters, many of them are wonderful people, but some of his supporters feel it's okay to lash out at us in ways that I think put us at danger. And I think we have to pause, hit the pause button, and think deeply about whether or not this is the kind of country we want to hand off to our kids.
And we want to hand off a country to our kids where the reporters lie, where reporters take a single anonymous source and run with it, and then find out later that they're completely wrong. That's okay, that kind of country. And the kind of country where they can say that the president, again, is a tool of Russia, is a Russian, an active foreign agent, a spy, committing treason against this country. That kind of country, that's fine. But when you go after the press, oh no, that's not the kind of country we want to hand off to our children. Jim, the simple fact remains that if you do a better job at your job, you would not be up for the criticism. See, this is like a weapons manufacturer complaining that people are using the weapons. Oh, you know, you're not going to get Smith and Wesson to complain when people when somebody wins a target practice contest. They shouldn't really be shooting at those targets. Well, what'd you make the gun for? It's theirs. They can do with it what they want. If you create something then you have to live with the consequences of that, Jimmy. Stop spreading fake news, and then you can stop being called fake news. When there is so much that you have spread that is provably false, and I mean, you can pick your favorite moments from Jim Acosta whining like a 13-year-old girl not allowed to go to the school dance. But one of my favorites is when he got into the argument with Stephen Miller at the White House about the Emma Lazarus poem on the base of the Statue of Liberty. That was part of a fundraising campaign to build that base. And so they put a plaque of it. It was a very successful fundraiser. Don't ask me how, you know, writing a poem raises money. I don't know. But it was a different time. It was years before anybody in my grandparents were born. So let's not pretend that the world hasn't changed. But that being said, because it is on a plaque on the base of the Statue of Liberty, does not make it legally binding, does not make it federal law. The ridiculous, by the way, if you actually can comprehend the poem and know what the Statue of Liberty was about. France gave us the Statue of Liberty. They didn't say, here, put this statue up in New York Harbor so that everybody in the world will come to it. No, it was not supposed to be a beacon for people to actually follow. It was supposed to be a beacon of hope, an example. We are the example to the world here. See, because the French got on our side during the revolution, and then they had one of their own. They threw off tyranny. They screwed theirs up after that, by the way, and pretty much ever since. But that's beside the point. The point was that we were the shining example to the world of how people could be, how a good country could be. It wasn't say, come on, let's go, everybody, this way. No, it was an idea. But Jim Acosta didn't know that. Jim Acosta didn't seem to know that the poem isn't law. So he got into that argument. But don't worry, he's the victim here. I also want to draw attention to the fact that, and it's a story CNN doesn't like to talk about, and it's a story that MSNBC doesn't like to talk about, and it's amazing how it's just been kind of wiped from the public consciousness. How James Hodgkinson, that name sounds vaguely familiar, it's because he's the left-wing activist who tried to kill all those Republicans on the baseball field in Virginia 2 years ago. Remember that? James Hodgkinson riled up. He believed the media talking point, the Democratic Party talking point, that the Republicans' health care plan will kill tens of thousands of people every year. It will kill them. And he, being off kilter, thought, well, if I have a chance to stop Adolf Hitler before he starts imposing his destructive agenda, well, I have a moral obligation to act. That's the kind of rationale thing, thought process that goes off in the minds of lunatics. The media immediately washed their hands of that. They stopped caring about that story and stopped reporting on Steve Scalise nearly dying while Steve Scalise was still on life support. They stopped talking about that story. They revisited it occasionally when they had no choice, like when Steve Scalise returned to the House of Representatives. They had no choice to talk about it then. But after 3 days of that story, they were done with it. To this day, we still hear about, what was that guy's name? Is it Gerald Loeffner, who shot Gabby Giffords? The New York Times editorialized about that at the time of the Hodgkinson shooting. And they once again, and this is kind of indicative and funny of how the New York Times editorial board apparently doesn't even read the New York Times. They wrote in their original editorial that Loeffner was inspired by a website for Sarah Palin's PAC, which had put crosshairs over Congresswoman Gabby Giffords' congressional district. We know that that's false. We now know that we've known for years. We knew almost immediately that that was false, that Loeffner was a rabid Bush hater. But it didn't matter. The Times reported it at the Times, and then the Times contradicted it. They actually did some journalism, and in the pages of the New York Times, they're the ones who broke the story that he was not some right-wing nut job, that he was just insane, and he actually had deep-seated hatred for President Bush. Then, when it was opportune, the editorial board, meaning the people who basically set the tone for the newspaper, certainly the editorial page, they added it in again. Said, yeah, Sarah Palin, she's the one who inspired that. They then had it pointed out in their own newspaper that that's not the case. There's evidence actually to the contrary and no evidence to support that. But because Paul Krugman had blogged on it the day of the Gifford shooting, it just became part of the folklore. That's how the lie stays alive. Because you never venture outside the bubble. You never hear anything but the lie bouncing around inside of it. The New York Times had to print a correction, a humiliating correction. I think they had to do two corrections on that piece because they'd gotten it so wrong, yet they're the paper of record. And according to Jim Costa, they're the heroes who are unfairly put upon by having mean things said about them when they crap the bed. But Jimmy was not done. We got more.
Some of your critics say if this really was a dangerous time to tell the truth in America, you wouldn't be able to write a book about it. Yeah. What do you say to them?
Well, I don't want it to become a more dangerous time. And as you and I both know, Brian, we had a pipe bomb delivered to CNN's headquarters last fall. And as I lay out in this book, you know, I've received a number of death threats. I'm not the only one. A number of news anchors and reporters who cover this president on a daily basis receive death threats. We don't know how serious they are. It could just be people venting out there, venting their frustrations. And I get that. You know, we all get mad about what we see on the news on a daily basis. The question is whether or not somebody crosses that line and does something that hurts somebody or perhaps kills a journalist. And as I write in the book, Brian, I think at that point we cross over into a different era for the United States, where we join a list of other countries around the world where the press is not safe to do their jobs, and we just can't do that. We cannot take that step because I think it's a far slipperier slope than we possibly can imagine at this point.
Yeah, can't let it happen here.
So the book is a preemptive strike against something that might happen down the line. Yet they, you know, Jim Acosta clearly believes that the rhetoric of the president being critical of the press can cause somebody to do something horrible. And I'm open to that possibility. It certainly is possible. I don't see how criticizing their lies or their errors or however you want to categorize each one is that. But if the president stood up and said, go get those people, yeah. Or, you know, if you get, watch out for those, they're going to rip you out, they're going to try and kill you, they're going to do, then yeah, there are certain things. But saying fake news is the enemy of the people is not that. Saying that Donald Trump is like Adolf Hitler is. Saying that Republicans want to kill people is. Saying that Republicans are perfectly happy to see Americans suffer and die because they want to feed their corporate overlords who will then give them campaign money, that's a little bit over the line. And that one actually did lead to that James Hodgkinson shooting. He was Hodgkinson before he was killed by the Capitol Police guards for Steve Scalise. Was pretty unambiguous about why he was doing what he was doing. And it was, in fact, the left-wing rhetoric. He believed it. He thought those people out there on the baseball diamond were going to gleefully, happily be responsible for the deaths of thousands of people. In his perverted worldview, he had no choice. It was a moral obligation. If you really and truly believe that Adolf Hitler, reincarnate, has seized power, how could you not act? If you really believed that somebody was going to kill thousands upon thousands of people, don't you have a moral obligation to act? Add into that some mental instability. I understand Jim Acosta's nervousness about people who could be mentally unstable and take it a bit too far, but saying that fake news is the enemy of the people is not the same as saying he is a puppet of a foreign government. He is, his policies will kill people. Your life, someone you love's life, will be in danger because of the actions of this person or these people. That is very different from "those people are lying to you." Very different. And if Jim Acosta can't see the difference, and if the human potato Brian Stelter can't see the difference, I don't know what to say to them. Of course, we know they do see the difference, but more importantly, they see it as our team and their team. They are clearly on one team. I tell you where I'm coming from. I'm a conservative. I have no qualms about that. I shirk off the label journalist. I have done some reporting, so occasionally, technically, theoretically, I suppose I could be classified as a journalist, but this show is not an exercise in journalism. This show is a news discussion program where I tell you the news, I read you the news, and then I go deeper into what it means and why it matters. That part becomes my opinion. It just so happens that my opinion is right, but some of us are just cursed with that skill. What Jim Acosta and Brian Stelter and pretty much everybody at CNN and MSNBC do is they do the exact same thing that I do. Yet they tell you they're straight shooters. They have no agenda. They are not on a team. They aren't wearing a uniform. And you know full well, if you look under their suits, they're wearing a uniform. And more than that, they're covered in that team's tattoos. They are fully on board with one team. That's the part that bothers me, and I think bothers most people. It's the dishonesty. If CNN just came out and said, look, we're a progressive news outlet. We come at the news from a progressive point of view. We advocate for progressive policies. We hope that progressive candidates win. I wouldn't have a problem, or the problem, as much of a problem that I have with CNN, for the simple fact that they're at least telling you where they're coming from. They don't do that. They say to you, look, I promise you one thing. I will tell you the unvarnished truth without my opinion sandwiched in there. What I truly believe, you may never know, because I am just going to give you the facts. And you, audience, are smart enough to figure things out on your own. That's not CNN. That's not MSNBC. MSNBC is at least a little more honest in that they kind of acknowledge that they're coming from a left-wing perspective. They swear that their journalists aren't. They will tell you that Ali Velshi and Stephanie Ruhle are news anchors when there's no way on earth they are. They will have Andrea Mitchell as their chief foreign affairs correspondent, or whatever the hell she is, and have a show on every day at like 2 or whatever it is, where she sits there and pretty much parrots Democratic Party lines. If you're going to do that, if you're going to say you're a progressive news network, fine. But then you can't say, but our journalists are real, when your journalists are engaged in that exact same behavior. Have a little bit of a line. Say, Andrea Mitchell, you can either be the host of this show on every day where you can give us your opinion, or you can be a serious journalist. The CNN model was always to say, well, we are the real journalists. You got Fox on the right. You've got MSNBC on the left, and right down Truth Street. That's where CNN is. It's not. And part of the reason it's not is someone like Jim Acosta and someone like Brian Stelter. They are not unbiased people. They are not particularly honest people. So forgive me if I don't take you seriously when you swear to me up and down that you are an unbiased reporter. I've seen your work. I've watched your work. I know your work is about you in Jim Acosta's case. But I know it's not honest. I know it's not fair. Still, this is the world that we live in. And this is the world they helped create. And now that world is creeping into newspapers. It used to be, yeah, there was always bias. There's bias in everything. You can never get rid of 100% bias. Bias is not as just that somebody is writing from a left-wing perspective or speaking things from a left-wing perspective. It's the choice of stories to even bother to cover. It's what's on the cutting room floor. It's part of, we talked about this with Brent Bozell on Friday. It's part of why the left-wing media so hates Fox News, so hates talk radio, now hates conservative websites and blogs and podcasts. Because they used to, if a story didn't make the cut, if ABC, CBS, and NBC didn't cover it, and the New York Times and the Washington Post didn't cover it, it had literally zero chance to become a national story. There just was no other avenue for it to come out through. The news weekly magazines weren't going to touch it. The conservative magazines might have touched it, but nobody was reading them, certainly not enough people. So they just ignored it and moved on. They had that power. The cutting room floor was where stories went to die. And that was it. He didn't make the 22-minute nightly newscast. Sorry, you're not getting anywhere on MSNBC. Well, Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, podcasts, conservative columns, those started to blossom in the Clinton administration because there was so much that the mainstream media was just ignoring. And it forced the mainstream media to cover some of these things. Thank God for the Drudge Report. Newsweek had the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton affair story cold. They had it cold. Michael Isikoff had the thing nailed. And at the last minute, right when they were ready to go to publication, the editors of Newsweek said, you know what, we're not going to run that story. We don't, we're going to spike that story for whatever reason. It couldn't be that we didn't think like you had it, because he had it. He was right. He had the proof. It was for some other reason. And normally, 10 years earlier, that story would not have seen the light of day. Nobody would have heard of it. Nobody would have bothered to report. And once Newsweek spiked it, that was it. Now with the internet, with Fox, with talk radio, with podcasts, those stories get out. Those stories can get out. And those stories can get so big that the media is forced to cover them when they desperately didn't want to. I think it was the Washington Post reporter that talked about the Gosnell serial killer up in Philadelphia, the abortion doctor who was killing babies that were born and women died in his botched abortions. And he had jars of human remains around. It was just a sick Caligula type evil going on there. And the Washington Post reporter told somebody, I think it was on social media, they said, you know, we look at the Gosnell story. We don't cover it because it's a local crime story. It's a local crime story. Think of all the times some obscure Republican says something stupid, and that happens often. It happens just as often on the left. You just don't hear about it. But as some obscure Republican or even some Republican running for a statewide office says something stupid, just says something stupid. And don't send me the emails. I get the emails defending Todd Akin, but I'm going to use him as an example. When Todd Akin said that you don't need to worry about getting pregnant if it's legitimate rape because the woman's body has a way to make sure you don't get pregnant from a legitimate rape. I'm paraphrasing. I don't need the correction. It's just making a point and using this as an example where that was incredibly stupid. It was incredibly ignorant of biology. Not only did Todd Akin have to respond to that countless times and be a horrible candidate, I mean, it's just incredibly stupid, but every Republican across the country had to answer for that multiple times. When I was writing my book, I found at least 8 examples of where Mitt Romney had been asked to denounce Todd Akin. Do you agree with Todd Akin? Will you distance yourself from Todd Akin? Should Todd Akin drop out of the race? And every time Mitt Romney said, yes, it's a ridiculous thing, it's an outrage that he said it, Todd Akin should absolutely withdraw from the race. What they never explained was that Mitt Romney had no ability as the candidate in 2012 to get anybody to drop out of any race. He could just say it. He could just answer. The reason they kept bringing it up was because it was so egregiously stupid that the media could paint and tar and feather Republicans, all Republicans, as do you agree? He didn't denounce Todd Akin soon enough. He didn't denounce Todd Akin fervently enough, so on and so forth. And subconsciously, they could keep getting in there, Todd Akin, Republican, other Republicans equal Todd Akin, and they could damage people. That 2012 election, while Mitt Romney was a horrible candidate, should have been a lot better for Republicans down the ticket as well. but the help of the media made that possible. So until Jim Acosta wants to find a reflective surface and really have an honest discussion, I mean, I guess he finds a reflective surface. I imagine he gets lost in the reflection in a spoon. Who is that handsome upside down fellow? But if he wants to get seriously reflective and have an honest discussion about the media, the state of the media today, I'm perfectly willing to have it. I know there are countless other people who are willing to have it. I think it's an important discussion to have. But you can't have a discussion about an important topic when the other side of the debate not only doesn't think it's an important topic, they don't think it's a topic at all. And that, I suspect, is the point of Jim Acosta's book and the problem with Jim Acosta's book. He is writing from inside his bubble, and he likely doesn't know anything outside of that bubble. I mean, just remember when he goes back, when he did the report from the southern border, and he's right there in El Paso, I think it was, and there's the border wall. He's like, yeah, there's a border wall right here, but there is no problem with people crossing here. And there is no problem with drugs coming through here. Like, no kidding, dumbass. It's because there's a wall there. He doesn't get it because he doesn't ever venture outside of areas where he's safe. He works at CNN. So in that extent, it can be understandable. You've got a hive mind. There aren't very many contrary opinions. Even the so-called Republicans on CNN are liberals. He doesn't, maybe in this book tour, he'll venture into some place where he'll be challenged a little bit and he'll have to think for once if he can. He's welcome on this show. I just don't think in a million years he would. We'll see. All right, that's enough about that. In other news, because there is other news, once I get going on media bias, I just go off on it. Over the right at the beginning of the weekend, on Friday, it was announced that the president and Mexico, the Trump administration in Mexico, had cut a deal to help curb illegal immigration. The president was very happy. He had threatened today there were supposed to be tariffs starting on Mexican goods, 5% across the board. Then they would go up 5% a month for the next 5 months, up to, I think, 25% was the total, if Mexico didn't do all it could or significantly more to help stem the tide of illegal immigration. Then Friday it was announced that they had cut a deal and everybody was happy. And, you know, Marco Rubio was praising the president. Republicans were praising the president. Democrats were saying this is, well, a deal to cut. Well, there's no problem. I don't see what the deal is. Because that's the narrative that they're using going into the 2018 or 2020 elections. Well, over the weekend, they tried to change that again. This CNN headline is, and hey, Jim, if you're watching, you might or listening, this could be why people say that you're the fake news. The headline, New York Times, Mexico, U.S. agreed on border policies months before Trump tariff threat. And you say, okay, what's this all about? You read the story a little bit. It says Mexico had already promised to take many of the actions agreed to in Friday's immigration deal with the U.S. months before President Donald Trump's tariff threat. Officials from both countries who are familiar with the negotiations told the New York Times in a story published Saturday. Trump moved to accept the existing agreement in a deal Friday after negotiations prompted by his threat to impose growing tariffs on Mexico in response to the border situation. And this story even sort of acknowledges it. There was a deal on many of these points, but having a deal and implementing the changes are two different things. Mexico had not been implementing the changes. Again, you're talking months ago. They're talking about back in March. It is now June. That's quite a ways ago. Yet Mexico hadn't done those things. So then the president said, we are going to impose these tariffs unless you do these things. And now Mexico is doing these things. They have agreed to do these things in a timely and serious fashion. So having the agreement is nice. It's all well and good. It's no good. It's worthless unless Mexico actually does something about it. And what the tariff threat did was to get Mexico to actually do something about it. The president suspended the implementation of tariffs. Up until the president made the threat of tariffs, there was no threat of tariffs. Now there is a threat of tariffs. Then Mexico says, okay, we'll do it. I know we've been saying for a while we'll do this, but now we'll actually do it. If the media doesn't see the difference in this and the important distinction here, saying you're going to do something. I was a teenager once, believe it or not, and there were many times when I was told to do things by my parents. And I said, okay, I'll do it. I'll take the trash out, I'll mow the lawn, I'll whatever it. Then, as it got later and later, because I had every intention of doing it eventually, the garbage came Friday morning, so if I didn't put it out right at 5 o'clock on Thursday night, I could put it out at midnight on Thursday. I could get up really early on Friday and put it out there, and, you know, sometimes that was my logic, and sometimes I wouldn't do that. So the orders would start coming, and then it would be the, if you want to be grounded, you don't, you know, and suddenly once the threats became real, then I would get off my ass and go and take the garbage out. My parents would always tell, you know, you got to go get a job. You got to go find a job. This was just after high school. As I've said, I've had more jobs than most families have had, over 70 jobs. And, they'd say, you got a month to find a job, get a job. And, I'd sleep in. I'd be going out. I'd be hanging out with my friends. Nobody gets up at 8 o'clock in the morning when they're not obligated to be somewhere. Well, every once in a while, the door to my bedroom would fly open and I would get squirted with a squirt bottle while I'm laying in bed. And, you know, that'll wake you up because that was the threat. Like, if you don't get a job, we're going to make sure you get a job. An agreement, because I had agreed to get up early to go look for a job. An agreement is only as good as the will and word of the participants. And my will and my word were not particularly good when I was 18 years old. So my parents found ways to make sure that I kept it. Mexico may well have agreed and did agree to do many of these things, including being more proactive in securing their southern border, but they hadn't done anything about it. Now they're doing something about it. Why? Because of the stick. It's not just all carrot. It's the stick. We will damage your economy if you do not do this. If you do not do what you said you were going to do. Honestly, how long does it take to deploy the National Guard, the Mexican National Guard, at the southern border of Mexico? It doesn't take very long. Yet for months, they've been hemming and hawing and dragging their feet and not actually doing it. So that some of this stuff had been agreed to previously is irrelevant, yet Democrats think they found something. Oh, that Trump, he's lying again. No. Now they're actually doing it, or they're going to get these sanctions, because the sanctions were not revoked, they were not repealed, it was not removed. The president suspended their implementation. It's a very easy thing to unsuspend their implementation if Mexico doesn't follow through on this. I would say this is lost on CNN and that it's lost on the New York Times, but I know that these people aren't this stupid. They're this corrupt, but they're not this stupid. Yet that's where we find ourselves again every single damn time. Speaking of illegal aliens, a lot of you have sent me this story and it's disgusting, that TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, is waiving its regulations so that we, the taxpayer, can pay to fly illegal aliens around the continental United States to wherever they happen to have somebody, usually family, who's also here illegally, so they can be reunited with their family. Isn't that nice? If you have a cousin who moves to Germany, and you just, you know, go to France and walk over into Germany, and you're, well, you can, it's kind of open borders there because of the EU now, but You get caught by German authorities and say, what are you doing here? And you say, I'm here, I'm trying to get asylum. And I have a cousin who lives in Bonn. They're not going to fly you to Bonn. They're going to fly your ass back home. If they fly you anywhere, you'll probably be charged for the flight. But in the United States, we are so stupid with our laws that we not only say, oh, you're here illegally, oh, you're trying to claim asylum, even though you've broken or you've not agreed to, not complied with international law by seeking asylum in the closest safe country, the first safe country you come through. All right, you got family in Seattle, you say? Well, as long as you pinky swear that you'll show up in 8 months when your court date comes, we'll put you on the next Southwest flight to Seattle so you can go and meet up with your family. It really is insane. These people paid thousands of dollars to human smugglers to smuggle them to the U.S. border, and then rather than charge them, we, the taxpayer, thanks to Democrats, are then on the hook. We're doing the job of human smugglers, but we're also paying for the privilege of doing it. And the TSA, as you know, if you've flown at all, has a requirement that if you are going to board a flight, you have to be able to show who you are. You know, that pesky photo ID, or should I say that racist photo ID, because showing your photo identification is racist. And maybe that's just when you vote. In any event, that is being waived for illegal aliens because not only are they coming across the country illegally, they're coming across the country with no documentation to prove who they are. So we, again, have to go on the honor system of people who have proven themselves to be dishonorable by knowingly and willingly breaking the laws of the United States as their first act here. They get waived onto flights that we are paying for. Isn't that lovely? Try that. Forget your wallet next time you go to... No, don't forget your wallet. Pretend you forgot your wallet, because if you actually did forget your wallet, you're not going anywhere. But pretend you forgot your wallet and see how far past security the understanding TSA will let you get. It won't be further than you can spit. But special rules for special people. It's almost more advantageous to be in this country illegally than legally, to be perfectly honest with you. And now we've got this story from the UK Daily Mail. This is rather disgusting and really to put a fine point on the difference between the way Americans are treated and illegal aliens are treated. UK Daily Mail headline, Las Vegas grandmother sues TSA after they forced her to do a strip search and made her remove a common feminine hygiene product. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. A Las Vegas grandmother is suing the Transportation Security Administration, blah, blah, blah. Rhonda Mengert had been traveling from the Tulsa International Airport on Mother's Day when her hip implant caused the metal detector to sound off. Mengert, who has TSA pre-check, informed agents that she had the implant but agreed to pat down. During the pat down, an agent found a common feminine hygiene product that she was wearing underneath her clothing. It goes on from there. I'm not going to read any more of it. You can imagine, and whatever you imagine is not going to be any worse than the reality of the situation. But this is the reality of the situation for Americans and for people who are in this country legally. For those of us who follow the rules, who play by the rules, we get screwed. We get to have the body cavity search from the TSA person. But an illegal alien come right through. And what's maddening is she's got TSA pre-check. I've gone through that. I have that. The point of that is to say that you are, you know, squall. You're cool. They do a little check on you to make sure that you don't have any suspicious activity. You get to keep your belt and your shoes on as you go through security. That's why they charge you extra for it. It's like a little background check that they do ahead of time. She'd done that. She'd paid for the privilege, and they still said, ooh, wait, we got to strip you naked, get rid of this, move this. They still treat you like a piece of meat if it suits their needs. Maybe the person was having a bad day. Who knows? But illegal aliens, they can conga line right through, probably skip the x-ray machines, the metal detectors, because that's the priority of the Democratic Party. Not you, not me. Remember a few months ago, maybe a month ago, I can't remember. I can't remember what day of the week it is most of the time. But I know I talked about this on the program before. My old hometown, my place of birth. There are no plaques marking my place of birth, so don't go looking for them. My place of birth in Detroit. They spent almost $200 million. Remember, the story was the Detroit city streetlights are in disarray. It's a horrible, horrible thing. And the story I talked about last time was how Joe Biden had tried to blame that on people not understanding how to turn the lights on because you needed a computer degree to do it. That was not true, but that was when he said that we went down to the ghetto and got some black women and taught them how to code. And everybody just kind of yawned. The media just let that casual. If a Republican had said it, it would have been horribly racist, but it's crazy sniffy Uncle Joe. They let it slide. Well, in that discussion, I told you how Detroit's problem was that a lot of people had stripped the copper wiring from the streetlights. So even if they replaced the light bulb, it wouldn't do any good. There's no wires running into it because copper has scrap value. Well, the city was celebrating itself for, with the help of subsidies from the Obama administration, and Joe Biden was celebrating this as well. Celebrating itself for having the streetlights back on. And one component of those streetlights was the fact that they had put LED light bulbs out there. These were the energy, it was very green, energy efficient light bulbs. And they were going to last for a decade. It was a wonderful boon to the city. Well, not so much. Town Hall has this story. It's kind of funny. A few years ago, the city of Detroit finished installing 65,000 LED streetlights in an effort to curb cost and pollution as well as increased safety. It cost $185 million to do that. I think you can get an incandescent light bulb for a lot cheaper than that. Well, now they're having problems with those light bulbs as well, because this is how crappy government works. Earlier this spring, attorneys for the city sued San Jose, California-based Low-Tech Electronics USA, which supplied the LED bulbs after inspectors discovered the bulbs were, quote, charred, burned, or cracked. The lights were supposed to last at least a decade, but in just 3 years, thousands have proven to be duds. Keep this in mind as everybody on the left promises you we can go to carbon neutral. We can get rid of all fossil fuels in 10 years. We have to, or we'll all die. We just need to switch to renewable energies, more energy efficient, this, that, and the other thing. The technology might exist one day where you could do that, but it's not there now. It is not ready for that. Yet, with massive subsidies, which means our tax dollars, cities and localities are going ahead with this anyway. Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. And it's hitting them upside the head. This is the world we live in. It's cost $9 million additional dollars to repair and fix the problem that these energy-efficient light bulbs that were going to save them so much money. That's what that cost is, the additional cost, in addition to you're really seriously approaching $200 million for streetlights in the city of Detroit. The catch is, people are still fleeing Detroit. There are huge areas of the city where nobody lives. I don't know if you've ever been to Detroit. I love the city of Detroit. I love the Detroit area. I spent all my time downtown once I became old enough to drive. There are city blocks where there's maybe one house. I mean, full-blown city blocks out in neighborhoods. There are city blocks where there is nothing. And that's a bigger problem. You can light all that up. If no one is there living there, what's the point of it? You want to talk about some savings of some money and some energy. Maybe you don't light up the areas nobody lives in. Just a crazy, crazy thought. I know. But it annoys me to see our government screw up constantly with no consequence. Nobody's complaining about the $185 million of our tax dollars that was spent on defective material that was never going to work anyway. That's just ignored. It's all these light bulbs are out and the city is suing and they have to pay another $9 million to fix the problem. That's what government does. It creates a problem and then it spends a fortune so-called fixing the problem. The real problem is that problem never actually gets fixed. So it keeps the government in business. They are always necessary to address the problems the people were elected in the first place to address. Lather, rinse, repeat. Do it right. You know, it's measure twice, cut once, not measure once, cut twice. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Don't forget those entries for the Brent Bozell signed book. It's signed by both Brent Bozell and Tim Graham. I ran into Tim after the interview, got them to sign both copies. So you got two autographs inside the book from both authors. I always like to try to do that. Otherwise, email compliments, complaints, whatever you got to Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. We'll be back here tomorrow, Tuesday, for another exciting episode.